Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Kuf Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, about five lines down. Gemara says, Tanur Banan, Ein matzchilim bo tzar tchila, aval usse bo shvil, deishi kanes, ve'yetze. Remember yesterday that we had two opinions as to how to read the Mishnah. We had the opinion of Rav Chista, who said that when we say that it means four and five, there are limitations on going down to the bottom of the otzar. Then we have a second statement of the Mishnah, is below at otzar, which tells you may not start an otzar on Shabbat, because it is mukzeh. On the other hand, we had Shmuel, who believed that you could start a otzar on Shabbat. That's not a problem to go into the silo on Shabbat. The problem only is to finish off a silo. So here, where the Gemara is speaking about a case where Tan Rabbanan in matchilin b'otzar b'tchila, that's clearly according to Rav Chista. Aval oseh bo shvil kedei shekenes v'yetze. You're allowed to make a path so that it can go in and go out. Mar says, oseh bo shvil, hamart in matchilin. What do you mean you're making a path in there? You're not allowed to start it. You're not allowed to go in the otzar and utilize it. So what are you making a path in it for? Hachik amar, oseh bo shvil b'raglav b'kenisato u'b'yitziato. You're allowed to make a path in there as you enter and as you exit. So what basically you have here is an otzar that's full of grain, full of some item, that is mukzah. So you can't engage with the mukzah directly. You only engage with it indirectly. Now what that means to engage with it indirectly happens to be a machloket rishonim as well as a machloket ha-poskim. Rashi says over here, biraglo, mifane biraglo lekan lekan, pushes it away with his foot to either side. Derech halichato, the way that he walks, the lo avitiltul, because that's not a problem of mukzah. The way Rashi reads it, it seems to be that it's incidental that you're coming into contact with the mukzah. You're walking, and as you walk, it happens to be that you bump into mukzah while you're walking. And the mukzah moves away from you because it's done in a way that's derech halicha. The other Rishonim, like the Rosh, who suggests here that it's really tiltul kalachayat. Now, the difference between them will be the halachic ramifications as to what we permit with regards to muksa and tiltul min atzad. The way the Rosh explains it, and the way the Mishnah Berurah paskins, is that tiltul min atzad by muksa is allowed. And therefore, if you need, for instance here, to walk through something, and there's muksa in front of you, you can take the muksa out of your way, push it out of your way with your feet. You can, if you have to, push it out with your elbow. If you're laying on a bed, you can have all this tiltul min atzad. On the other hand, what seems to be from Rashi, and this is the way the Chazon Ish paskins, neged the Mishnah Berurah, you can do tiltul min atzad only when you do it derech halichato. Only if you're doing it in the normal course of your walking. You can't intentionally go in and do tiltul min atzad. You can only do incidental tiltul min atzad. And that'll be the big nafkamina lalocha between these two explanations. Whether you can do intentional tiltul min atzad. According to the Rosh, according to the Mishnah Berurah, you can. According to what seems to be from Rashi and the Chazon Ish, you can only do it unintentionally. Can you do this tiltul min atzad? You cannot intentionally do this tiltul min atzad. Tarabanan, tvua tzvura. You have tvua that's piled up. Bizmajit chilba mi'erv Shabbat. If you already started taking from it from Erev Shabbat, mutar li stapik mimena b'Shabbat. Then you can continue to source from it on Shabbat. V'im lav, and if not, asur li stabeg mimena b'Shabbat, divrei Rabbi Shimon. And if not, if you haven't started it before Shabbat, then you can't utilize it on Shabbat as feed because it's muksa. Divrei Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Acha matir. Rabbi Acha says, no, that's muta. Mary says, klapi layo. How could that be? Where are you turning to? Where would you go? This doesn't make any sense. Rabbi Shimon, we know, is the author of the position that there's no muksa on Shabbat. How could you be that Rabbi Shimon is the one, or the Tana Kama here, saying that there's a difference between whether you started before Shabbat or whether it wasn't started before Shabbat. It should be irrelevant to Rabbi Shimon. Where it says, Ela'ema, you got to reverse the opinions in this Baraita, which is Divrei Rabbi Acha. Rabbi Acha is the Tana Kama. Rabbi Shimon, Matir. And Rabbi Shimon is the Matir who doesn't think there's any difference whether you've started or you haven't started because, according to Rabbi Shimon, there's no issue of Mukse on Shabbat. Tana, Kama Shi'ur Vua Tzvura. What is it considered to be a pile of tzvura? In all these cases, the she'ilto does not have the girsa of tzvura. He just has the Gemara reading, Tana kama she'ir tzvura. How much tzvura do you need to be there in order for it to be muksa? A small amount of tzvura, which would not be muksa because you haven't made it into a pile where you're mekatze min adat. It's only when you make it into a very large pile that you really put it out of mind because you're storing it there. You've stacked it in such a manner that you plan to leave it there for duration. And so because of that, it attains a shem muksa. But if it's below that threshold, then it won't attain shem muksa because it wasn't put there to store it or to make it into a pile. So Gemara wants to know, what is that threshold? The answer is letach. Letach is that threshold. Letach is half a kur, or the equivalent of 15 sa'ah. But minei Rav Nechumi bar Zechariah me'abaye shir tevurah tevurah bekama. Malay, hare amru. They said, shir tevurah tevurah letach. It's a letach, which is 15 sa'ah. Ibailuhu. Hani arba v'chamesh kubot. Again, this is according to Rav Chista. Rav Chista says that the 4 or 5 baskets that you take out are exact. You can't take out more than 5. 5 is the maximum you can take out. According to Shmuel, 4 and 5 are just examples. You can take as many as you want. So this question is not relevant. This question is relevant to Rav Chista, who says there's a maximum of 5 that you can take out. We want to understand, what are these 4 and 5 kubot? The Gamar Barav Chamesh kubot in Tfei Lo. Is the Hakpoda here on Tircha? And therefore, the maximum amount of baskets is what matters, because that's the number of trips that you're going to take. So 4 or 5 is the maximum amount of trips, no more. Alma, the me'ute behilucha adif. What we're trying to do is minimize the amount of walking, the amount of tircha that you do. Dilma, the me'ute masui adif. Or maybe it's better to reduce the load that you're carrying. So for instance, if you could take out in 10 trips, the same amount as you could take out in 5 trips, but you would take it half the size each time, maybe there we would opt for you to do that, because it would reduce the load that you carry each time. So is it better to carry out 5 whole baskets, or is it better to carry out 10 half baskets? Question revolves around, which is more important to avoid? Extra weight or extra walking? So Tashma, we have a machloket, what seems to be a machloket between the Braito. Tatani chada, mifanin afilu arav chamesh kumot, shokade shemen v'kade yayin. Could take 4 or 5 baskets worth of barrels of oil, barrels of wine out. V'tani idach, another braita, be'eser v'chamesh esrei. You could take out 10 or 15. My love, v'hakamiflegei. Maybe the machlok between these braitos is exactly this. The ma'asavar, miyuta be'iluch adif. The first braita thinks that minimizing the amount of times that you take the loads at is more important, and therefore he says only 5 kupot. U'ma'asavar, the latter braita says, mi'ute be'masui adif. That lowering the load is better, and therefore he's willing to have you go 10 times rather than to carry heavy your load. It says, though, to kuli alma mi'uta bilucha adif. What we're after here is reducing the amount of times that you have to walk. The 4 or 5 here is the maximum of times you're allowed to go back and forth. We're trying to minimize the tircha. So then, once you've done that, how do you explain the difference in the braito? The first braito we understand, you can go 5 times. But what about the 10 and the 15 in the second braito? You thought that the 10 and the 15 were modifying the baskets. Akadin gai. It's modifying how many barrels that you're carrying out. The first braito is talking about a case where each basket only carry 1 kad, 1 barrel, because the barrels are large. And the latter braita is talking about a case where you have smaller barrels, where you can fit 2 barrels per basket or 3 barrels per basket. And you're talking about these types of small barrels that they find in the city of Arpanya, that you can fit 2 or 3 of them into a basket. So therefore, in the first braita, you had 1 large barrel that you could take out in the kupa. In the latter braita, you're there 2 or 3 times 5, which gives you 10 or 15. You're only taking 5 trips. It's just the number of barrels that fit into your kupa. But there's no evidence here that it has to do with the load. It all has to do with the number of times that you go in and out. And that's the Gemara's conclusion, that we're focused on miyuta be'ilucha. Ibailu. Again, the question here is asked according to Rav Chista, who says that there's a maximum amount of times that you can go out, maximum number of kupot that you can take out. Hani arba v'chamesh tekamar. 4 or 5 that are mentioned in the Mishnah. Afgav de'idle orchim tuva. Even if he has many more guests. Odilma kol lifi orchim. Or is it relative to the number of guests that you have here? That there is a relative increase in the number of kupot that you can take out based on the number of guests that you're expecting. Ve'im tim saloma, akol lefi arachim. If you want to suggest that it all has to do with the guests here, chad gavra mefani lekulu, odilma gavra gavra mefani lenafshei. If we allow you to go in excess of the 5 because you have multiple guests, then who is allowed to take out the items? Is it that the balabait, the one individual, is then given permission to take out 10, 15 baskets, but he has to do it himself? Or do we say it's every man for himself, that each guest can take out the amount that they need? So you can have people helping out. Tashma, da'amar rabo, amar rabbi chia. Pamachat alach rabbi lemakom echad. The time that rabbi went to a certain place, v'ra'a makom tachuk t'talmidim. He realized that where he was teaching, it was too tight for the talmidim. V'yatzad ha'sadeh. So they went out to the field. Problem was that the field was also crowded. It was full of piles. It was full of bundles of grain of harvest. And Rebbe cleared the entire sedeh. So it's interesting here, the imer, similar to the word sokel, what you think would mean to stone, when it's used in reference to a field, sokel means to clear the stones from the field. So over here also, imer, le'amer, means to pile things up, to stack them, or to or bundle them. So, but here, it's used in the term imer, means that he cleared the bundles from the field,
or that he piled them into some sort of central pile.
Rabbi Yosef, Amar Rabbi Hoshaya, Pamachat, Alach Rabbi Chiya l'makom echad. Rather, he had a story with Rabbi Chiya. V'ra'a makom dachuk l'talmidim. He saw that it was difficult spacing for the talmidim. So Shmamina, number one conclusion is, clearly based on the number of people here, because they cleared the entire field. The entire field is more than five times back and forth. It's also more than five kupot worth. Why did he do that? Because it has to do with the number of people coming for the Beit Midrash. Therefore, there is a relationship between the number of items you can move and the number of people that are there. You still have the question of the second question that we posed, which is it the one person that can do it, or is it multiple people that can clear it out? Tashma, well, let's try to conclude that from the story as well, which is Vimei Rebbe. It says that Rebbe cleared the entire field. Sounds like only one person could do it. It says, Litameich, Rebbe b'denafshei imer. Even if you want to take the story literally, you think Rebbe cleared the field? Rebbe is a nasi. He is an ish chashuv. There's no way that he was doing this himself. He was sending someone else to do it. Elitziva v'imer. He gave the word and then they cleared it. We don't know who cleared it. We don't know if one person cleared it or multiple people cleared it. Maybe everybody cleared their own. When Rebbe says imer, it wasn't literally that he went and cleared it. It means that he gave instructions to clear it. And we can't conclude from that whether it was one or multiple people that did it. And therefore we do not have a conclusion to that piece or that question based on the stories that we brought. So now we have a little legato with regards to achnasat orchim. Am Rabbi Yochanan, gedola achnasat orchim kashkamat beit midrash. Having over guests and welcoming guests is equal to getting up to go to the beit midrash. In this case, it means limud haTorah. Tiktani mipnei orchim umipnei bitul beit midrash. In our Mishnah, it says you're allowed to clear out the area to make space. It says for guests. It says to make room for the Beit Midrash. He equates the two because they're both found in the Mishnah. What we do right there takes it one step further. Amar, Yoter Miashkamat Beit Midrash. Not only is it equal, but it's greater than that. Diktani, because our Mishnah says Mipnei Orchim, Vadar Mipnei Bilutul Beit Midrash. So in the first statement, Rabbi Yochanan equates the two. He equates the two because they're both found in the Mishnah. Rav Dimi Minardo takes it one step further and says, not only are they equated, but Orchim is written first in the Mishnah. So that would suggest that Achnasat Orchim trumps Limud HaTorah. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Gedula Achnasat Orchim, Makpalat Pnei Hashkina. This is a famous Gadata that Achnasat Orchim is greater than welcoming the presence of God. Dichtiv, because it says by Avraham Avinu in the beginning of Parshat Vayera, there's a pasuk that says, Vayomer, as you see here in the parentheses, what's said there in the pasuk is Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. Now, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud in the Torah can be read one of two ways. It can be read Chol, or it can be read Kodesh. It can be read as Adoni, meaning my master, and not the Shem Elohim, or it can be read as Adoshem, meaning the God. So over here, the pasuk says Adonai, but we're not certain as to whether that Adonai is Adonim Sheli, my master, so referring to the three Malachim, and Avram is addressing the Malachim, or he's saying Vayomer Adoshem, and he's speaking to God. It's unclear there in the pasuk because it uses a word that in a sense is ambiguous, because throughout the Torah we have this with Adoshem and Elukim. So the question is, when it comes to that terminology, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, you have the same question when it comes to Elukim. In the Torah, Elukim is used to mean Shofet, Sar, somebody important. And Elukim is also used to refer to God. So sometimes you don't know which one it is. For instance, in this week's Parsha, Parshat Mishpatim, it says, Ad Elohim Yavo Devar Shnehem. To the Elohim will both their word go. Now there, Elohim is not referring to God, but rather to the court system. Now, sometimes it means the court system system is called Elohim because they also represent God. Over there, it means a court. So you have the same thing here. The question is whether this shame is a shame Hashem or shame Chol. So Avram is speaking to Hashem because it says, Vayirah Alav Hashem. Hashem appears to him. And then he sees the Malachim and then he says, Vayomer, if you read it with the shame being shame Kodesh, then he's saying, Vayomer Hashem, Imna Matzati Chain Beinecha Al Natavor Mi'al Avdecha. Don't leave me. Don't leave me. Who's he speaking to? He's speaking to Hashem. Says, listen, I gotta go take care of these malachim. You just hang on here for a couple minutes and I'll be back. That's one way to read it. Or the other way to read it is if you read it, Vayom Adonai, referring to the malachim, then he's talking to the malachim saying, don't pass by, I want to take care of you. And then you wouldn't be able to learn anything from it. It's a machloket in the Gemara and Shavuot as to which way to read it, whether it's Chol or it's Kodesh. But based on the fact that you would read it as Kodesh, then you would learn from that that Gdolach Nasat Orchim Yakolat Bnei Ashkina. Avram is putting God on hold to go take care of the Malachim. Amar Avalazar Bo Resh Lok Midat Kodesh Baruch Hu Midat Basar V'dam. The God is nothing like a human being. Midat Basar V'dam Ein Katon Yecholomar LaGadol Hemtein Ad Shavo Etzlecha. By human beings, the little person can't say to the big person, I mean the more important person cannot be addressed in such a way as that you hang on while I take care of my things. V'ilu B'Kodesh Baruch Hu K'tiv. And over here, Avram puts God on hold in order to take care of the malachim.
It's important to know from this Agadato that the conclusion that you would draw is Achnasat Orchim, which is a din of Ben Adam Lechavero, would trump an issue that is Ben Adam Lemakom Akpalat Nei Ashchina. And that's very important because many times in religious life we give emphasis to the Ben Adam Lemakom. We focus on one's personal religious development and we do it at the expense of others or with a complete lack of emphasis on Ben Adam Lechavero. And over here, this Agadato and this Gemara tells you that if it's not at least important, it may be even more important, Ben Adam Lechavero, than a Ben Adam Lemakom. And the Ramban says in last week's Parsha, as well as many places in the Torah, that Ben Adam Lechavero, civility between people, how one interacts with other people, is a prerequisite for Matan Torah or Kabbalat Torah. Without proper Ben Adam Lechavero, forget about Har Sinai. There is no Kabbalat Torah. So this is a reminder to all of us to make an additional concerted effort towards improving our Ben Adam Lechavero, at least as much as we invest in or emphasize our Ben Adam Lemakom. And obviously, Ben Adam Lechavero without Ben Adam Lemakom doesn't fulfill one's requirement to be a religious Jew that follows the word of Hashem. But we know from the punishment of those that were in the Mabul, where they failed at Ben Adam Lechavero, versus the punishment of those found by Migdal Bavel, where they had a failure in Ben Adam Lemakom, that we take much more seriously failures in Ben Adam Lechavero than we do in Ben Adam Lemakom. So the best way is to have a balance, an izun, a proper approach to both Ben Adam Lemakom and Ben Adam Lechavero, to be the Ish Hashalim, to be a person who is a complete Jew.
Amar Rav Yehuda bar Shila, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan, Shisha Dvarim, Adam Ochel Perotem Olam Hazeh, V'Keren Kayemet Lo De'Olam Haba. There are six things in which the principle is available to you, the Olam Haba, whereas you do have some benefit, you have some derivative benefit from them in this world. Now, it's interesting here in terms of Ochel Perotem Olam Hazeh, Tosafot already addresses it and says that in the Perek Amad Kedushim, the first Perek Kedushim, Farish Da'ainu Imaita Shkula Machre, that if his scale was equal between Mitzvot and Averot, that this mitzvah has extra weighting, or it will help him to push the scale over. Because the schar mitzvah by Al-Malekah, because there is no reward for mitzvot in this world. So what does that mean, peruteim b'lam hazeh? Keren kayemet olam haba, I understand. But how do you benefit for peruteim b'lam hazeh if there's no schar mitzvah in this world? So Tosafot says, that's just that it's machrat. It helps you in making decisive. It has extra weight. If you're equal on the scale, these carry extra benefit in order to weigh the scale for judgment on Rosh Hashanah for issues where you're being judged b'olam hazeh. So then the Gemara says, v'eluhein, which are they? Hachnasat Orchim, that's obviously why it's being brought here. One of those is welcoming guests. Bikur Chulim is visiting the sick, but visiting the sick isn't simply to visit the sick, but it's the Fakeach al Chulim, to see what their needs are, to see what you can do to help them out. V'iyun Tfilah. Now, Iyun Tfilah, we've seen here, you can see on the Masoret HaShas already, quotes you, go see Tosfot back on Kuf Yud Chet. See Tosfot in Brachot Lamed Bet. Go see Tosfot in Baba Batra. And that's because Iyun Tfilah appears in all these places, and it doesn't mean the same thing. Because the Gemara in Brachot says Iyun Tfilah is negative. It's something negative. Over here, the Gemara seems to indicate Iyun Tfilah is something positive. The Gemara in Baba Batra says the lack of that Iyun Tfilah is negative also. So Tosafot actually divides and says there are two types of iyun tefillah. There's iyun tefillah, which means kavanah b'tefillah, which is what Rashi translates it over here, like a vein b'tefillato. That is positive. That one who has proper kavanah and tefillah, that's what we're talking about iyun tefillah. That's a positive. The other type of iyun tefillah is when Adam yoshev umitzapeh. He sits and waits to see when will Hashem answer his tefillot. That is negative. Because that, number one, has a presumption that you're going to be answered by God. And it's also a recipe for disaster. Because you have set your expectations high, and you're going to be disappointed. So that iyun tefillah is negative. That's what's referred to in the Gemara Brachot. Gemara Bavavachot Tosfot says that the iyun tefillah there is a lack of kavanah. So there are two negative iyun tefillah, which is lack of kavanah, or anticipating your tefillah being answered, and there's a positive iyun tefillah, which is kavanah b'tefillah, and that's what's mentioned here. Iyun tefillah that's positive here is having proper kavanah and tefillah. Hashkamat beit midrash, which is getting up early to go to beit midrash, learning Torah. Ve'amigadel banav l'talmud Torah, someone who brings up his children to learn Torah. V'dan et chaveiro l'kaf zchut, and someone who always judges his fellow Jew favorably. Where it says, Ini, is that really true? Manan tnan. We have a Mishnah that seems to say otherwise. Mishnah is found in the Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph in Peah. It's also quoted in the Gemara in Kiddushin Lamed Tet Amud Bet. And there's a slight difference between the two of them. We have here the girsa that's found in the Mishnah in Peah, which is there it says, Kibud Av Ve'Em. The items that would be in this list are honoring one's parents, Gemilut Chasidim, doing acts of kindness, Shalom Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, making peace between your fellow Jew and you, V'Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam, and learning Torah, which is greater than all of them combined. So over there, in the Mishnah Peah, you have four items. In the Gemara and Kiddushin, there's an additional item, which is Hafnasat Orchim, is mentioned in this, or quoted as part of this Mishnah in the Gemara and Kiddushin. So Gemara seems to say, Hani in, V'Dachrin Alo. The fact that the Mishnah only mentions these four, or five, depending on which girsa you use, means that these are included under that category, and not more than that. So then, how could it be that Rabbi Yehuda Bar Shila Amar Rabasi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, who has made a number of appearances in our Gemara lately, how could he be saying that it's all of these items that are not mentioned in the Mishnah? So the Gemara says, Hani Nami Behani Shaychi. The four that are mentioned in the Mishnah, or five that are mentioned in the Mishnah, are categories. And items mentioned by Rabbi Yochanan are subsets of those categories. So the four mentioned, subsumed under them, are the items mentioned by Rabbi Yochanan. So if you go through the items that are mentioned by Rabbi Yochanan, he says, Achnasat Orchim, Bikur Cholim. That's easy. Where would they fit under? What category they would fit under? They would fit under Gemilut Chasadim. So Gemilut Chasadim would include both Achnasat Orchim and Bikur Cholim. Hashkamat Beit HaMidrash, V'amagadel Banav L'Talmud Torah. That category, that would fit under Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. Hadan et Chaviro L'Kaf Zchut, judging someone favorably, what category would that go under? Vad Shalom Ben Adam L'Chaviro. The only one that you're left with is Iyun Tefillah. So Rashi says that Iyun Tefillah goes under Gemilut Chasadim. And he quotes a pasuk from Mishlei. Mishlei, Yud Aleph, I think pasuk Yud Zayin there. Says, Gomel Nafsho Ish Chesed. A person who is kind to his soul. Gomel Chesed Nafsho. He's kind to his soul. What does it mean to be kind to your soul, to do Gmilat Chesedim to your soul? That's to David. It's not the simplest way to read the Pasuk, but actually using that Pasuk says that you can see taking care of your soul is also called Gmilut Chesed. That's davening. What's interesting here is then in the way that we've described it here according to Rashi, Kibud Av Ve'Em would have nothing under that subset. So if I was laying it out, I would say maybe Iyun Tefillah should go under the category of Kibud Av Ve'Em. Just like Kibud Av Ve'Em is found on the right side of the Luchot, on the items that are Ben Adam LeMakom and not Ben Adam LeChaveiro, then maybe Iyun Tefillah should also be a subset of Kibud Av Ve'Em. Actually, it would work well. That would work nicely because then each one of the categories that are mentioned in the Mishnah and Peah would now have something under it in Rabbi Yochanan's statement. And so I would suggest maybe the possibility of putting Iyun Tefillah, davening, acknowledging that you are a beneficiary of someone else's generosity, graciousness, which is the aspect of Kibud Av Ve'Em, Hakarat HaTov, similar to Iyun Tefillah, which is the recognition of Hakarat HaTov towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu and acknowledging that you are subject to His benevolence. So I would say maybe the possibility that you could connect Iyun Tefillah to Kibud Av Ve'Em. And so now the Gemara tells us two nice stories about Dan the Kafskut, that you must judge your fellow Jew favorably. Now here, we mentioned this many times, I always quote this, whenever we see Dan the Kafskut, or Chuchid B'Ksherim, is the interpretation of the Rabbeinu Yonah on Masechet Avot. When he discusses this, he does not say that you're under an obligation to judge everybody favorably. He says there are three categories of individuals, they're Tzadikim, Beinonim, and Rishayim. For Beinonim, for those people that sit in the middle, where their actions are ambiguous because they are a Benonim. And so now you have the possibility of interpreting their actions either for the good or for the bad. Over there, you have an obligation to be Dan Lekaf Zchut, to take the high road and to assume that what they did was favorable. In a case where it's a Tzaddik, you don't have a choice. You have to assume that what he did was right. Even if it looks like something totally wrong, you have to assume that he did the right thing. And even if he didn't do the right thing, you have to assume that he was already chuzer b'tshuva and corrected it. On the other side, if you have a rasha, then you do not have to be dan lekaf zchut, you can be dan lekaf chol, because that's his whole MO. That's how he works. He always is doing the wrong thing. He's making the wrong decisions. And so you're under no obligation to be dan lekaf zchut. So dan lekaf zchut here is not a generic statement about every situation. It's subjective, depending on the person that you're looking at. So if the person that you're looking at is normally a person that makes bad choices as a rasha, then you can assume he does the same here. And the opposite is true by Tzaddik, who always makes the right decisions, and we assume makes the right decisions, you have to assume he does the same there. The question of Dan Lekaf Zchut is Benonim, wherein you have an individual who sometimes does right, sometimes does wrong. Over there, when you have an ambiguous action, you have to assume that his action was Dan Lekaf Zchut, is done favorably. So, Dan Rabbanan, Dan et chaviro Lekaf Zchut, Danino Todo Zchut. Someone who judges his friend favorably, Danino Todo Zchut. Midah keneged midah, Hashem will look favorably upon him. There was this incident with this individual. Shirad migalila yon. He came from the upper Galilee. He was hired by a wealthy individual in the south, meaning in Yehuda. Shalosh shanim. He worked for him for 3 years. Erev Yom HaKippurim. On Erev Yom Kippur, Amar lo ten nischari velech vezonet ishti ubanai. Let me go home. Give me my pay. I'm ready to go home. I want to go. Take care of my wife and my children. There is an alternative gersa of Erev HaRegel, because let's see in a second, the story is going to conclude after the Regel. It could have been Erev Yom HaKippurim and then Motzei Sukkot, which would have been equally plausible. But some have the gersa, you see the Rif and the Rosh have a gersa of Erev HaRegel. Amar lo, enli ma'ot. He says, I have no money to pay you. Amar lo, enli peirot. He says, give me some vegetables, some of your vegetation, your fruits, some of your produce. Amar lo, enli. He says, I have nothing available. Tenli karko. So give me some land. Enli. I have no land available. Tainli beima, give me some livestock. Ainli, I don't have any livestock. Tainli karimu kesatot, give me pillows, mattresses, something, some metaltalin. Ainli, I have none. Hifshil kelav de'achurav, threw his sack over his back, v'alach lebeito b'pachei nefesh. And he walked home despondent, had given up hope of getting paid, so he walked home penniless and despondent. V'achar arego, after the regel, so again, over here, if it's Erev HaRegel, then it's after whatever regel. Now then, if you think it's Erev Yom HaKippurim, then Achar Regel would be an after Sukkot. Natal Balabait, Skaro, Piyado. He took his payment. Vimo Masui Gimel Chamorim. And then he took 3 donkeys worth of loads. Echad Shel Machal, one of food, Echad Shel Mishteh, one of drink. Echad Shel Minei Migadim, another of sweets, delicacies. Falach Lo de Beito. And he went up to this individual's house in the Galil Elyon. Char Shachlu V'Shatu, after he ate and drank with him, Natan lo schoro, he paid him what was due to him, Amarlo. And now the Balabait says to this worker, Bishash Amarta li, ten li schari, when you told me, please give me my wages, Amarti, and I said, ain't li ma'ot, and I said, I had no money, but me chashadani, what did you suspect? Amarti, Shema prakmatia bezold nizdam lecha, says maybe there was a great business deal going down, v'lakachta ben. And so you lost your liquidity. You gave up all your liquidity because you invested in some product or produce that had come in that you thought was a good buy. And so now you're no longer liquid. And my point when I said, you know, give me livestock. I said, I have no livestock. What did you suspect? Maybe his livestock's rented out to be used by others. When you said to me, pay me through land. And I said, I have no land. What did you suspect? What's the situation? Maybe it's rented out to others. Now here, rented out is it's sharecropped to others. There's 2 types of sharecropping. There is a sharecropping where you share in a percentage of the production. There's a sharecropping where you have a fixed payment per year for the land. Muhkeret is a fixed payment. You're receiving a fixed payment from the produce to utilize the land, and the remainder goes to whoever works the land. So b'shash amarti chayimli peirot, time that I said to you I had no produce, b'mecha shatani, what did you suspect? Marti shema inan mi'usarot, maybe they weren't tied yet. B'shash amarti chayimli karim v'kisatot, and then when I said to you I have no pillows, no mattresses, blankets, b'mecha shatani, what did you suspect? Marti shemi gdishko nechasav l'shamayim, maybe it was magdish, all of his possessions to Hekdesh. Amalei ha'avodah kach haya, says exactly what you suspected is what happened in all these situations. Hidarti kol nechsai bishvil rupanus bini, I gave away all of my wealth, all of my possessions to Hekdesh because of Rupanus my son, shelo asak b'torah, that did not go in the way of Torah. I didn't want him to inherit all my possessions because he was not leading a life of Torah. He was not going to learn Torah. Shabbat Eitzel Chavirai B'Darom, when I went down to my friends in the Darom, I'm assuming it means the Tamari Chachamim in the Darom, Hitiruli Kol Nedarai. Then they were matir my neder, and that way I was able now to pay you because I had this Atarat Nedarim. Vata, Kishem Shedantani L'Zchut, you, just like you, judge me favorably in this very difficult situation. Amakom Yadino Tcha L'Zchut, God should always look favorably upon you. Tanu Rabbanan, Maseh B'Chasid Echad, an incident with a Chasid Echad. Now Rashi says, whenever you have Chasid Echad, based on the Gemara in Baba Kama, that means O Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba, O Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Yilai. And so Rashi quotes it over here as Ver Maseh B'Chasid Echad Shepada Rivachat Bat Yisrael. He went and redeemed a young girl, a young Jewish girl who was in captivity. And when they got to their lodgings for overnight, he had her sleep at the foot of his bed. Machar, in the morning when he awoke, Yerad Vitaval. He went out and went to the mikveh. Vishanalu Talmidav, and then taught his students. Ve Amar Lahem, and he said to them, Vishashish Kapia Tacha Miragultai, when I had her sleep at the foot of my bed, Bamei Khashatuni, what did you think I was doing? Amar Nu Shema Yesh Banu Talmid Shena Badu, the Rabbi. Maybe amongst us there is a Talmid that you don't know well enough to know whether he's trustworthy to leave the young girl unattended, or to leave her with the students because of fear that this student would not act appropriately. In the morning when I went up and went down to the mikveh, what did you suspect? What would have been the suspicion that someone would have had? The suspicion was that he had biyah with this woman. He was then a quote-unquote ro'a keri. He had a seminal omission then, and he would require mikveh in order to even tire himself and to learn Torah. So he says to them, what did you think happened? Samarnu Shema Mipnei Torah Haderach Irakeri. The Rabbi, maybe because of the travails of the journey that caused you to have a seminal mishnin. Amalem Avodah Kachaya. Says exactly what happened. The reason she slept at the foot of my bed was because I had some suspicions. The reason I went to the mikveh in the morning is because I had a seminal mishnin. Atem Kashem Shin Tantuni Lekav Zchut. You, just like you, judged me fairly. Makom Yadin Etchem Lekav Zchut. Good. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu should also look favorably upon you. Tan Rabbanan, Pam Achad Utzrach Davar Chad L'Talmidei Chachamim. There was an issue that was required for the Talmidei Chachamim. Itzel Machonita Achat, by one of the matrons of Rome. Shekol Gdolei Romim Mutzim Etzla. She was visited by many of the important noblemen of Rome. And these matrons seem to hold significant power or sway within the government. They're mentioned a number of times in the Gemara about Machonita. These matrons, for some reason, if they could plead to government officials, they were important. Now, over here, the Gemara implies that she was a matron, or she had that status because she was what seems to be a zona of sorts, that the Gdolei Romi are found by her. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that Gdolei Romi found by her that she was in the circles. She was in those circles of the leadership or of the nobility of Rome, and that's why she had access to those individuals. So Amru Mielech, who's going to go and represent us by this woman? Amalem Rabbi Yeshua Nielech, I'm going to go. Halach Rabbi Yeshua v'Talmidav. Rabbi Yeshua and his Talmidim went to visit this matron. Kevin Sheikia l'petach beita, once he reached the door of her house, chalatz tefilav brachok dalet amot, took off his tefillin 4 amot away. Binichnas, he went in. Vinala delet bifneim, and then he locked the door, closed the door in front of them. Chashi yatza, when he left there, Yerad v'taval, he goes to the mikveh, b'shana l'talmidav, and he teaches talmidim Torah. V'amar lahem, b'shash chalatzti tefillin, b'mech hashatuni, when I took off my tefillin, what did you suspect? Now, based on the actions of Rabbi Yeshua, what you could have suspected was that he was engaging with her in biyah, because he took off his tefillin so that he could engage in biyah. He locks the door so that he could be alone with her, and then he has to come out and go to the mikveh and teach Torah. All of which would be evidence of the fact that he engaged in biyah with her. So he says to the students, what did you think? Amarnu, kasavur rabbi, lo yikanez divrei kedusha b'makom tumah. So he said, why did he take off his tefillin? Because tefillin are divrei kedusha. They shouldn't go into a place of tumah. Now why is it a place of tumah? That's why I said before, it seems to be evidence that they thought maybe she was a zonah, but this was a makom tumah for whatever reason. B'shah shana alti, when I locked or closed the door, b'mechashatuni, what did you suspect? Amarnu shemadavar mo'o chult yesh beino lebeina. Maybe there was an important issue, governmental issue, that they needed to discuss in private. When I came out and I went to the mikveh b'meich hashatuni, what did you suspect? Amarnu shema nidzet zinora mipiyal begadav shel rabbi. Maybe a spittle came out of her mouth and landed on your clothing. And we know that the chachamim were gozer on the nachrit, that she have a din of a zava, and then a nachri has a din of a zav. And we know that the rok of a zava is mitamei tumat avatuma. And so over here, it fell on his beged, and so he was now tamei from that sinora, and he went to the mikveh to clear up that tuma. Malem avodah kachaya. You're right. Exactly what you suspected, what you said, is what happened. And he says to them, atem kishem shedantuni l'schut, since you judged me favorably, makom yadin etchem l'schut. Hashem should judge you favorably, just like you judged me favorably. Okay, now back to the Mishnah. As we discussed in the Mishnah yesterday, the Mishnah gives examples of items that you're allowed to move on Shabbat. And those items seem to be pshita. Of course you can move those items. So the Gemara wants to know what the chiddush is in each of those items. So we discussed them quickly yesterday in the Mishnah, and here the Gemara lays it out. If I name Trumat Torah, pshita, of course you can move Trumat Torah. Why wouldn't you be able to move Trumat Torah on Shabbat? That it's being housed or kept by a Yisrael who can't use it. It's only good for the Kohen, but it's at the Yisrael's house. I would have thought since he himself can't utilize it, it should be muksa for him. Since a Kohen could eat it, it is not muksa even for the Yisrael. Udmai. Demai is the produce of an Amma Aretz, where we don't know whether he's taken off Trumot and Masrot. So Demai, I lo chazile. Why are you allowed to use Demai? Demai is not ra'ui for you to use. You have to be mafrish the Trumot and Masrot misafek. And until you do that, you can't utilize it on Shabbat. So it should be muksa. If he wants to, he could dispossess himself of all of his possessions, disown all his possessions. And then he would be a poor person. And then he could eat demai. So therefore now, it's also ra'ui for him, even though he has yet to do that, since it's within his power to do that and become an ani, therefore it's considered ra'oi. It's not. Machilim et aniim demai vet achsanya demai. You're allowed to feed the poor people and the troops demai. Ram Ravuna, Tana Beit Shammai Omri, Mein machilim et aniim demai vet achsanya demai, Betilo Omri, machilim et aniim demai vet achsanya demai. And then Ravuna says that it's not a Mishnah that's muskam the kol, but rather machloket Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai says you can't use demai to feed the poor people and the troops, whereas Beit Hillel says you can feed the poor people and the troops. Both these situations is in a case where you are obligated to take care of others. So there's a dispensation given by demai that you can use demai to take care of others, because rov amei aretz masrinhein. The majority of amei aretz do take off trumot and masrot. It's a miut hamatsui, miut that is found, and therefore we suspect, and therefore out of safek we take off the trumot and masrot. But in certain situations, we're going to rely on that rove. And these are the situations where you are obligated to take care of others, that we will rely on the rove. As far as the troops are concerned, the achsanyo, there is a machloket between Tosfot and Rashi as to whether this is only by Jewish troops, or you can even use them by non-Jewish troops. You can feed the mind to non-Jewish troops as well, because the government obligates you to feed them and to pay for their upkeep, or when they come to town, you have to give them lodging and food, and so maybe you could use the mind. So here in this case, because you can make yourself into ani and make it real oy, therefore it's not muksa on Shabbat. Now truthfully, the Gemara could have given the same answer it gave before by Trumat, which is that it's ra'oi for the Kohen. Well, so it's over here. It's ra'oi for the ani, so that should make it okay for you. Why do you have to make yourself into ani? Just that being ra'oi for the ani should be sufficient. Tosfot mentions that even though they could have answered that, this is even a better answer, because here, even ra'oi for yourself, not just for someone else. Mishnah says, a ma'aser rishon that has its trumah taken off of it, Maaser Rishon requires Trumat Maser to be removed from it, and it has a Chiyuv Mita Bidei Shemayim if you don't remove the Trumat Maser. But once you remove Trumat Maser from Maaser Rishon is Chulin. Anybody can eat it. So the Gemara says, Pshita, if you have Maaser Rishon that has Trumat Maser taken off of it, what do you need to look? Lotzricha Shigdimo B'Shibolim. He took it earlier when it was still in its stalks, but not Naimena Trumat Maser, but not Naimena Trumat Gdola. And he separated off of that Trumat Maser, 1/10 of the Maaser Rishon that he received, but he did not take off Trumah Gedolah, the original 2% that is owed to the Goyen from Trumah Gedolah. In terms of separating out the matnot from the produce, there's an order that has to be kept in the way that it's separated. Taken off for Bikurim are taken off up front. Trumah Gedolah is then taken off, which is 2% up front, which is given to the Goyen. After you've taken off the 2%, then you take off the 10%, which give Maaser Rishon to the Levi. So technically, out of 100, the Levi would really only receive 9.8, because it's 10% of the remaining 98% that he gets. But what he did here is he went before the Goyen and got his 2%. And he got Maaser Rishon, and he got a full 10, because he took it up front. Now his Maaser Rishon technically has embedded in it both Trumat Maser and Trumat Gedolah. So he should have to separate out from this Maaser Rishon not only Trumat Maser, 1/10 of it, he should also have to give off the 2% that he owes from the 2% the Kohen should have gotten up front for Trumah Gedolah. Right here it says he only took off Trumat Maser and not Trumah Gedolah. Nevertheless, it's okay because Kiha De Amar Rabbi Abau Meresh Lakish Maser Rishon Shikdimo B'Shibolim. If you take Maser, the Levi comes and jumps the gun and takes Maser Rishon while it's still in the stalks. Patur mi Trumah Gedolah. You do not have to give Trumah Gedolah. Shenemar. You have to remove a Trumah from the Maaser Rishon. Maser mina Maser. Maser mina Maser. Amar to the Chah. You only have to take off Trumat Maser. Velo Trumat Gedolah. U Trumat Maser mina Maser. You don't have to take off both the Trumah Gedolah and the Trumat Maser. So you are patur from Trumah Gedolah. Amalei Rav Popola. Baye. Hachi. Afilik Dilmo Bikri. It should be the same thing when he goes to the pile after it's already been worked over and brought to its final stage. It should also be, if he goes to get his Maaser Rishon there, he should also have to pay Trumat Maser, not Trumah Gedolah. So there he should be patur. Amalei, alecha makra, on you, the pasuk says, mikol matnodechem tarimu. That from all your gifts you have to give. All your gifts seems to include even Maaser Rishon. You'd have to give Trumah Gedolah. So you are chayav in Trumah Gedolah. Umarait. How did you know? How do you know one pasuk which says you always have to give Trumah Gedolah is referring to a case where you took it from the Kri? And how do you know that when you are patur from Trumah Gedolah is when you took it in the Shibolim? My answer is high idgan, high low idgan. Question if it reached the point of Gemar Malocha for Trumah. Before the Kri, Meruach HaKri is what makes you chayav in Trumah. Meruach HaKri is the final stage of the processing of the Tfuah. When you smooth over the pile. That is the final stage. That stage makes you chayav in trumot. You're chayav in masrot from the time that it reaches by tva, a third of its growth in the field. Maser kicks in much earlier than trumah. So over here, if the Levi goes in and takes his matana for maser prior to the chiyuv trumah, then in that case, the pasuk we're going to assume means that you only have to give trumat maser from that. You don't have to give trumah gedolah, because when he took it, it was not chayav in trumah gedolah. Not to say that what he did is right. He should wait until there is Gemar Malacha and the Trumah Gedolah is taken off. But nevertheless, if he acts in this way, he will not be obligated to pay Trumah Gedolah. On the other hand, if the Levi jumps the gun to take his Maaser Rishon before the Trumah Gedolah, after Idgan, after Meruach HaKri, after you're already Chayav and Trumah Gedolah, there he will not be Patur. They'll be obligated to take off the Trumah Gedolah as well as the Trumat Maser. So that'll be the difference here in the cases. And that's why in our case over here, he gave Trumat Maser and not Trumah Gedolah. Nevertheless, it's still Ra'oi because that's what you're supposed to do in these situations. Tosafot does note that Idgan is really not the threshold for being Chayav in Trumah Gedolah. There's another step which is Riyat Pnei Abayit. You have to bring it into the house. After you've done Meruach Kri, bring it into the house in order to be Chayav in Trumah Gedolah. So Tosafot gives two answers here. One answer is, when it means Idgan, it doesn't mean literally just when you make the pile, but when you make the pile and then you take it in the whole process of getting to the Gemar Malacha and taking it into the house, that's when you're Chayav. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is it's giving you the threshold from when the Levi is no longer Patur. The cutoff for the Levi not able to give Trumah Gedolah is up to Idgan. Until that point. Even though the Chiyuv of Trumah Gedolah does not kick in already until Riyat Pnei Abayit, it's already past the point where the Levi is patur from giving Trumah Gedolah, because it's too far past the point of just Maser. You're already entering into the world of Trumah, and therefore it's the cutoff. Now the Gemara asks about Maaser Sheni v'Hekdesh Shenifdu. Maaser Sheni and Hekdesh are allowed to be redeemed in order to ease your ability to give either the money to Hekdesh Or to go up to Yerushalayim with the Maisu Sheni, you're allowed to redeem it. Mar again says, Pshita, once you've redeemed it, it turns into Chulin. What's the question? The Balabai, the owner of the produce, or the owner of the item that was Mukdash, if he himself redeems it, he has to redeem it at its value, plus a Chomesh. He has to add on a fifth, which we know is a Chomesh Mila Bar, which is the equivalent of a quarter. He has to add on 25% to the value when he redeems it. So how come Ashmalan? The conclusion from this is that ain chomesh ma'akev. The chomesh is not ma'akev, the pigeon, and it does go out to the chulin even if he doesn't add on the additional chomesh. No, he's supposed to do it. When he doesn't do it, it still works. The pigeon works. Betumus sayavesh, dry lupines, dafka yavesh, only dry lupines because they are edible. Avalach, if they are still moist, lo, kevan de marir lo achla. Because they are bitter, the moist or fresh lupines are bitter, so nobody would eat them. Only once they've dried out do they become sweet, and therefore it's only considered to be a food once it's dried out. So it'll be muksa while it's moist because it's not edible, it's not a food, and nobody would have that in mind on Shabbat because it's not edible on Shabbat. Okay, we'll stop over here.